Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 112 of the Interviews Podcast. We are here for the post-match reaction of Lazio-Inter at the Stadio Olimpico, which finished 6-0 to the visitors. Nick, you okay? You ready for this?
Ready.
Calhanoglu in the 41st, Di Marco in the 45th, Barella in the 51st, Dumfries in the 53rd, Augusto in the 77th, and Marcus Thuram in the 90th minute. Man, that felt good to read out. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Johnny Paterno, powered by SempreInter.com, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. And of course, given the magnitude of this episode and the opponent that we played today, we had to bring on a special guest here. Johnny, who do we have with us today?
I mean, we have a very, well, first off, let me say, this is episode 112, peaches and cream episode. You know how it is. But all kidding aside, we had to bring on the biggest Laziale I know. I mean, always supporting them, win, loss, draw. He doesn't hide from his losses. He doesn't hide from the negativity. He doesn't hide from anything. If he's wrong about something, he'll get out in front of that train. If he's right about something, he'll also let you know. Okay. But we had to bring on Nick Diani from Kicks and Picks podcast.
Boys, appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be back. This is maybe the least enthusiastic I've been enjoying. Looking forward to it. I was happy about the invite. And then the game happened. So is what it is, like you said. We saw some flaws. We'll get into it. Congratulations on the win.
Wow. He's taking the humble route. See what happens. Jeez. Wow. Really making it tough for us here, Nick. Do you regret accepting the invite prior to the game?
No, never. Never turned down an invite. Love you guys. Love the show. Happy to be a part of it. I regret the performance from my team, but it's okay.
Speaking of
that performance, cost me my job today, so it was not a good day for me.
Was it worth 3 points?
I mean, if I knew I was gonna, I would have been 12-0 than if I knew I was gonna lose my job. You know?
Right, but
Sean McIntosh, unfortunately, not too happy with what occurred today. And what occurred today was the, I believe, the first time in Serie A that Lazio has lost a home game by 6 goals. So there's no way around it. An absolute shellacking, a history-making spanking. And let's get into it. It's been an interesting weekend in Serie A overall. You had Atalanta just be able to barely scrape by Cagliari. Obviously, Juventus and Milan both dropping points. Fiorentina losing. Napoli, you know, not looking so great in that first half, but came back to win that game against Udinese. And then this game was huge, arguably the biggest game of the season for both clubs. I think it's pretty easy to make that argument, but I think a lot of people seeing Lazio this season were expecting something different. To be honest, I was expecting something different. I think a lot of Interisti were really worried coming into this game.
Let's be a little fair though, because they had us against the ropes for the first 40 minutes. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's
this
what
felt
makes
like Leverkusen
it that much worse.
2.0.
That's what makes the result hurt. I don't think there's any shame in losing to Inter. I don't think there's any even embarrassment, right? We've seen Inter put up 4 goals on 2 very good teams so far this year. So I'm not even that embarrassed by the final scoreline. But like you said, it was 2 games in 1, and that's really the frustrating part. I think for the very first time this season, I saw Lazio lose their composure and lose their cool. And then that's the one thing I can really compliment Baroni on. And I wasn't too high on the signing. I talked about it with you guys. Like, you're getting this guy from Hellas. You know, what good is that going to do us? But the one big praise I have for him is he's changed the entire mentality of this locker room. He has these guys ready to play every game. He has them taking every game seriously. They've come from behind multiple times. And this penalty incident broke them in a way that I haven't seen them broken yet this year. So that's the frustrating part. I could put the rest of it, the final result aside. But that one was a tough pill to swallow.
That is ultimately what was, you know, the back and forth that I was having with myself is like, for 35 minutes, Lazio looked like they could hang with us. But at the same time, I was also looking at the lineup and I wasn't necessarily feeling like I'd take any of your players in our starting 11. I know the season Nuno is having, but you wouldn't take him over Di Marco. You're not putting Rovella in over Hakan. So, you know, I do think Inter is the better team, but it does have to be said there was a collapse in mentality after the penalty incident. Before we get into all these different, it was an action-packed game. We'll get into all the different things that occurred. The first thing that I want to start with, you know, talking about Serie A this weekend, can we define who the contenders are for Serie A at this point? After this weekend, I think it's clear that it's between two teams, and I think those teams are Inter and Atalanta. Fiorentina, you're going to expect that to drop a little bit. Yep. Juventus and Milan are essentially out of it. And then with Lazio, you know.
This was the game.
This was the game where you kind of say, okay, this is they're going to fight for top four. And with Napoli, I can't trust a Napoli side that A, just lost Buongiorno, and B, two-thirds of their forward line is Politano and Lukaku, which I'm out on. What do you guys think? Like, what is the race at this point? Nick, we'll go to you and then John.
Yeah, I was going to agree with you. I think you're exactly right. I think Buongiorno, I don't know the severity of it. I only saw the early reports this morning. I don't know exactly what happened.
Fracture in his back. So yeah, it could be pretty significant.
They said initial ones was late January, or early February.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's
best case scenario isn't good, right? That to me probably is the determining factor. I was going to say that they probably stick around for a little bit longer, but I think you're exactly right. You hit on all the high points. That's a massive, massive blow to them. That's just like when Juventus lost Bremer. Lukaku, I don't know. That's the head scratcher for me this season, that Conte bent over backwards to get this guy in there and discard Osimhen. And obviously there's other stuff going on, but that wasn't the signing to propel you to a Scudetto here in 2024-25. So I have to agree with you. Two teams.
Yeah. You had this at the beginning of the year.
I mean, listen, I don't want to say that I'm the smartest guy on Serie A Twitter, but I might be the smartest guy on Serie A Twitter. Like, let's look at the facts, right? I said 1-2, Inter Atalanta. People laughed. Certain somebody who might run Sempre Inter kind of made fun of, you know, some of the signings. Another guy from the Italian football podcast thought going from Scamacca to Retegui was going to be a massive downgrade. Huh. Interesting. But anyway, yeah, no, it really is a two-horse race. I mean, no disrespect to Lazio, Fiorentina, Napoli, maybe a little disrespect to Napoli, or Juve. But, I mean... This was a game I honestly thought that Lazio was gonna be a tough one for us to overcome. And we saw in the first 41 minutes, really, it was looking that way. Had it not been for that penalty, I don't even know if that second goal comes in the first half. You know, we really, like, it could have just stayed 0-0 had we not been fortunate enough that Denzel Dumfries decided to show the ups of slam dunk competition Vince Carter and just... I mean, he was hanging up there, really. And to be able to get that header and have it hit, you know, the hand there, that was very, very fortunate for us. I don't know if the result would have turned out the same had we not been able to get those two goals there at the end. So, listen, hats off to them. They took it to us. They really did. I was very afraid, to be honest. I thought that, you know, they had us up against the ropes, and it was really just... Ben, don't break. That's really what we were doing. Hang on, get out of the first half here, and let's regroup. And fortunately, we were able to get those two there, and you know, kind of how we did at Napoli last year away. You know, it was the same type of thing. Sommer made some massive saves for us to keep us in that game. And now, you know, we were able to kind of do the same thing here. So nothing but respect for Lazio. And Baroni has had them playing fantastic all season. Like Nick said, you know, this was not something that I thought would be a great hire. I did like what he did at Hellas. I think he elevated the game of a lot of young guys there and made them, you know, feel confident in themselves and was able to obviously hang in and stay in Serie A. But I did not expect this by any means. So fantastic work so far. Fiorentina, same thing with Paladino. Although I did think that was an upgrade on Italiano personally.
Definitely.
And, you know, I mean, Napoli and Juve are Napoli and Juve. You know what they have and who they are. I just don't see now, like we said, with Buongiorno being injured.
It's big.
I don't think there's any way they, you know, who they have left. Rahmani and I don't even know who else is there.
Jesus, is he still there?
Yep. He is.
Now, the other thing I do want to say to both of your credit for calling, I mean, Atalanta, to me, forget about how good they've been, right? They've been pretty consistent for the past couple of years. They obviously got a big trophy last year. We knew that coming in, but they probably have the second deepest team after Inter. And that, I think, is also why you're seeing them where they are. Gasparini has done a tremendous job of keeping guys fresh and rotating them. You know, you're seeing Rategi, who leads the league in goals. He barely gets more than 60 minutes. You know, you have Lookman coming off the bench in some games. You have games where Pasalic is playing a false nine. Like, they pretty much are doing whatever they want. And that's a credit to the depth that they have. And especially if Scalvini is now healthy. I don't know. I know he featured briefly last week. I don't know exactly, but if he's back in there, they got a pretty deep team.
That Atalanta juice, man.
Yeah. And I think they also, the Italian Football Podcast mentioned it. It feels like Gasparini has figured out how to win now that he got that trophy under his belt last season. Like, it's like a different, they just don't. My concern with Atalanta is I think we're a better team, obviously, head-to-head.
Who'd they lose to, Atalanta?
You guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's all. And what was the scoreline there?
That's what I mean.
Yep, there it is.
Head-to-head, I think we're a better team, but I don't trust the rest of Serie A. Obviously, like you saw, Cagliari, they had their opportunities, and then Karanasecki pulled out a miracle performance.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a lot about a lot of the good that Inter did in this game today. So before we get into that, so that it's not an absolutely miserable experience for you, Nick.
Thank you.
Give me the case for why Lazio is going to get top four over the likes of Milan, Juventus, Bologna, Fiorentina, and so forth.
You know, I was feeling really good about their chance to stick around until today. And like I said, it's not even so much the result itself, but every weakness that Lazio has was exposed today. And to me, that was a flawed transfer market. I think they did a decent job of bringing in some good wingers, some good midfielders. We don't have a striker. We don't have a target man. Tatti's not it. We've seen that for 2 years now. I'm not going to knock the talent that he potentially has. I'm not going to knock his work rate, but he is not a dependable goal scorer. And that's a big, big issue. And our defense is a disaster. I think Tavares has masked a lot of that with the good that he's doing going forward. I think Romagnoli, for the past 2 years, 3 years, has been pretty solid. Not spectacular, but he's been dependable. He's been hurt. And now today you saw a game. Patrick is awful. Matosic is awful. Gila is awful. Gigo came in and had the worst 10 minutes you could possibly have. And you know, that's not necessarily his fault. The guy came off the couch to jump in the game, but really, really flawed in the back line. And Provedel hasn't looked good, not from game one. So they're just letting in way too many goals for my liking. They're letting in way too many goals compared to the past 2 years. So it's going to be tough. I think they've exceeded expectations, but if they don't figure out this defense, really tough for me to say they're going to have a chance at top four.
Wow. I hope they do.
Wow. I would love to see it, but you saw it today. You saw 55 minutes of why it's going to be tough.
Well, we have to see how they rebound, because it was a defeat that you can put a lot of it on mentality. Obviously, Inter were stellar, but that there was a falling apart period. And let's talk about how that came to be, right? So the first, there were a couple opportunities. I think the biggest one for Lazio was that Tijani Noslin volley where he just didn't catch it, but he was free in the middle of the box and just didn't do his best with it. And that was a real scare for Inter. And then you have the corner that comes in. It's a Dumfries header that grazes Gigo's arm. And then the follow-up action was Lautaro went to kick the ball, obviously kicked Gigo in the face. Kiefe, up until that point, had been pretty lax with giving... Not pretty lax, had been pretty handing out yellow cards like candy on Halloween for Inter players. Was that, in your opinion, because I think it's cut and dry, but I also know that, you know, the two hosts here, we host an Inter podcast... Your opinion of Kiefe's handling of that situation?
There was so much going on, and I think there's so little transparency with VAR from a broadcast standpoint, right? I don't know, obviously, what they're saying to the referee or in the thing, that it was tough to really understand for a long time what it was they were looking at. Are they looking at a potential red card? Are they looking at a potential handball? Are they looking at a foul? Because, and I don't have any evidence to say this, I'm just wondering it out loud. Like, did Dumfries foul Gigo? I mean, I don't know. He was up there for a while. He kind of was on his back. I don't think it was a foul. It didn't look like one. But as you see a replay over and over and over, you can kind of go and make a case for just about anything. And I just think the lack of transparency in the moment is tough, and the lack of consistency. And I'm not putting that down to this one decision. That's just a kind of overall referee VAR thing. With Italian football, we're never beating the allegations from that standpoint. But ultimately, was it the right call? Probably. I mean, is it a handball? Absolutely. No, I mean, I'm not going to deny that. It was tough to understand what was happening at the moment. And the worst case scenario just happened to come out for Lazio.
I definitely have something to say about what you just said, but I'm going to kick it over to Johnny for your interpretation of that situation.
I mean, listen, to me, it was a tough one. I didn't know what they were going to be calling either. I didn't know if it was going to be, like Nick said, were they going to give it a red to Lautaro? I thought that would have been ridiculously harsh. Every replay angle I saw, yes, he makes contact, but at the same time, he's not on the ground. I forget. Well, I don't even know how to pronounce the center back's name, to be quite honest. I'm going to
go with Gigo.
That's what we say. Yeah.
Is that what they say? I guess. Okay.
Yeah. about his 15th minute of play time this year, so I haven't seen him too much.
I've heard it butchered and said 15 different ways, so I don't know what it is. But Gigo's on the ground. Lautaro has every right to go for that ball. Like, at that, like, you know, it's... Sure. So if they would have called a red, that would have been ridiculous, in my opinion. At first, initially, I'll be honest, I thought Gigo got a handball, but I was like, all right, maybe he didn't. Like, I didn't see anyone complaining or anyone going crazy with it, so I was like, all right, maybe nothing happened there.
Just Inzaghi, actually, if you saw the replay, he was like the only one who caught it.
He was the only one, and I'm like, you're 500 meters away. How did you see that? But I just thought he was trying to, you know, defend Lautaro from getting a red or something. But that happens. Initially, somebody on Paramount Plus said offside. I'm like, I don't know who was offside.
Yeah,
I didn't see it. Then on the replay, you do see Lautaro technically would have been offside for sure. I didn't think he made contact with the ball for it to have affected the play, to have been impeding in any way or whatever. But again, a million different things going on there. And then when they finally went to look at it and they showed the replay, I'm like, oh, that's a stone cold handball. Like, not even a question. Glad it, you know, that was it. And I think because of that being the handball first, you can't really even look at the Lautaro anything incident else. And you know, make any claims or turn a yellow or red, whatever. Yeah. So fortunate there, because I think that had it not taken place, they might have found a way to. I'm not saying they would have, but it possible they could have found, you know, an excuse.
The only reason I'm questioning is, was it a foul? Because, like, is it possible that he's that dumb to have his hand flailing in the air like that? That's why I kind of wondered if he got pushed in the back.
Right. Where is
his hand? There's no way you're not dumb. But
there is a way.
I guess not. So I guess so, right.
Nick, you made a great point as far as, like, you don't know how any of these episodes are going to go, because we've been watching. If you've watched Serie A since the introduction of VAR, you've seen all of this stuff called. You've seen, you know, that it grazes the hand and it's a penalty. You've seen Don't Freeze rises up above his, you know, his defender. That gets called as a foul. You know, the Lautaro move, that could have got called. It's like you saw Kosunu in the Atalanta versus Cagliari game. That was a handball, but not called by VAR. It's like no one, you don't feel confident. You're watching something on the broadcast. You're watching the replay. And to the fans, it's pretty clear cut. But the fact that you're also sitting there with doubt in the back of your mind, I think goes to show like the state of VAR and reffing in Italy, where you just don't know what they're going to call. Like, what do they care about in this specific situation?
Right.
And for the people that said that are looking at the Lautaro, you know, kicking Gigo in the head and saying that that should have been what they were looking at, the first action is the Gigo handball, and that's what you have to go off of. With that said, if a penalty is given and then after the penalty or after the foul occurs, another foul occurs on the park, the referee can hand out a card for that. It's not like play ultimately stops. Like, you're going to go with the penalty decision because that was the first action that was taken, but you can penalize subsequent things that happen on the pitch. You can't negate the penalty, but you could have carded Lautaro in that situation if you did think. So for the people that believe the penalty should not have been given because of the foul that Lautaro, you know, made, that's not how the rules work. But if you wanted to say dangerous play, yellow card, I would have been okay with that too. You can penalize the player for actions that are, you know, taken after the initial foul. So ultimately, I do think that they got it right, but I think you make a great point of like, you're just sitting there. You don't know which way these guys are going to call it. Hakan pumped that into the back of the net, and as soon as the ball came back out to him, he booted it. There was some anger with himself. Sorry, Gino Lautaro's getting a little feisty over here.
Time to put the dog down.
You heard the name.
There was a little feistiness in it. Obviously, he's missed the penalty, his first penalty for Inter, and you can see that he was pretty pretty upset about it. And
I know hindsight's 20/20, right? But would you rather have him made the Napoli one and miss this one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did I get a vote in that?
Sure, absolutely. You get a vote in that. Yeah.
No, because that gives you 3 points against Napoli in a head-to-head, and then this is another head-to-head, but you take your chances with 45 minutes left in the game if he misses that penalty, despite the fact that Lazio were playing well.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was really the penalty that caused the head loss from Lazio today, because it wasn't like Inter immediately started dominating after that. We had one more good action to end the half, and it was the Di Marco goal. And I think going into the break down 2-0 might have had something to do with that.
Backbreaker.
Yeah. Go ahead, Nick.
No. I was just going to say, you mentioned Hakan frustration. He was pretty much invisible for that first 40. I mean, I don't even know who to attribute it to looking back. Like, was it Rovella? Was it Guendouzi? I mean, I think both Lazio did have a lot of the ball. So, you know, it just definitely seemed like you didn't hear his name until he stepped up for that penalty kick. So that could have been some of the frustration as well.
Yeah, he wasn't on the ball a lot. There was a lot of sloppiness on Inter's part in that first 35 minutes. Did you guys see after Kiefi awarded the penalty that Rovella got in Kiefi's face and Kiefi gave him the yellow card, and Barella was the one to be pulling him back? He saved him from potentially getting sent off there. I was like, part of me is like, just let them, you know, antagonize the referee.
That's
the other part
national
of me
team,
is,
that's national team brothers looking out for each other. I'm never going to hate on that.
Yeah, but I thought it was a very interesting action that happened. But obviously the next big thing in the game is the 2-0 for Inter. Dumfries to Di Marco. A beautiful finish. He was by himself on that side of the pitch.
We're going to need to talk about this for a little while too. So
Okay. Dumfries' best game for Inter, some are saying. That's what I've heard. I don't know, you could confirm or deny that.
I'm going to confirm it. I'm going to 100% agree.
Wow.
I'm going to 100% agree. Fantastic play from Denzel Dumfries. Huyan, are you listening? Huyan, can you check? I need you to bark twice for us. And if you're in Milwaukee and if you're listening to this, even though I know you're in Minnesota, but finally, right? You're happy that we finally get to praise your fallen son, put him on the pedestal of, or the pantheon of greats that he is. This might have been Mycon vibes to the fullest extent, right? Nima said that. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but I heard the words were tweeted.
I don't know that I'd put the two of them in the same tweet.
I don't know if I would put them in the same stadium, let alone.
Yeah.
Years, Nick.
Unless the tweet was, I can't think of a complete opposite player than Mycon, then I could see it in the same tweet. But okay.
Only way I could put them in the same tweet is if you said Mycon's number minus Dumfries' number equals, you know, that's the only way that I could justify putting them in the same tweet. But I mean, all kidding aside, it was a phenomenal game, start to finish for him. Will he be this? The thing that Huion fails to recognize is, will he do this same type of performance in the next matchup, or will he be the same one who is misplaying passes, you know, playing with Timberlands on his feet and kicking the ball, you know, 700 meters into the air? I don't know. That if he could be this player week in and week out, I will have no problem praising him. Same way I have no problem criticizing, you know, players like Barella when they play poorly. You have to be able to see both ways. That's I don't know. It's hard.
So obviously Pavard's injury is gonna loom large here as far as Dumfries' playing time, because Dumfries gonna have to deputize back there. Bissek can't play every game, although De Vrij has literally played every single game, and it's incredible what he's doing, but we'll get to that. How are you feeling about that Dumfries renewal after a performance like this?
We're just adding millions to the price tag every time we play, so I'm okay with it. You know? Value's going up. Win, he stays for the guys like Huion who support him and love him like their actual son. Win for me that if he continues to perform like this, that, you know, maybe a club in the EPL is like, wait a minute, that Denzel Dumfries guy looks pretty good out there. We might need him here at Chelsea.
Like, you can almost see him on Liverpool, where like it's a team that just masks really poor defenders and gives them insane PR, and they do pretty well on offense.
Yeah, and next thing you know, they're linked to Real Madrid,
right? So.
Why don't we cut out the middleman and just sell him to Real? You know,
like, you could do that too.
There we go.
It was good pass, good play, good goal. I mean, DeMarco wide open. Matosic was a fucking lost.
Perfectly weighted cross, though. Like, I have to.
Everything about it. But three defenders just didn't know where they were, which is like infuriating.
Yeah. So Bonetti kills me every single time this DeMarco Dumfries connection happens, because he's like
Matty Bones
to wing back. Wing back to wing back. Like, it's the first time we've ever done it, but we do it so often, it makes me laugh. But speaking of this connection, I did want to ask you guys, Dumfries to DiMarco, is there a better wing back duo in Europe? And I have some examples that I thought of here. You guys may have some other ones. You have in Leverkusen, Grimaldo and Frimpong. PSG, Hakimi and Nuno Mendes have been pretty good this year. Then you have Trent, Alexander-Arnold, and Andy Robertson.
Stop that right now.
Where are we ranking DiMarco and Dumfries as far as wing-back duos?
Grimaldo and Frimpong are the only ones that come close, I think.
Yeah.
Out of those examples.
And I would have to maybe even give the edge to Grimaldo and Frimpong, just because Grimaldo can take free kicks and scores bangers, but he's not allowed.
I mean, he could. He has
until
the
until I see him take one this season. I can't give him the edge right now.
Okay.
Now, if I'm picking one player out of all of them, I'm obviously taking DiMarco above everyone. His left foot is the ultimate cheat. It might be. I forgot. Actually, I think Stunt Peg said this. Neve, if you ever listen to an episode. One, I love you. Two, we need you to be on as a guest. Full disclosure to our listeners, I have emailed her. I have reached out on Instagram trying to get her to come on. Like, actually wrote a well-written email to invite her, because the way she respects Federico DiMarco and Bastoni is amazing. But she did say DiMarco's left foot might be as good as Beckham's right foot, and I might have to agree with that. to be quite honest. Like, it's just such an unfair advantage. And the way that he's able to find teammates and put the ball in such a perfect position for them to be able to finish and score, that I think Dumfries could probably have 12 goals right now if he finished all the crosses that Dumfries has put on a platter. I mean, that Di Marco has put on a platter for him. So if he can figure that out.
Is it a coincidence that every time I come on, Di Marco has had a good game? Or is it just, it doesn't matter when I come on because Di Marco always has a good game, right? I feel like it's not even that I sound smart, but for 3 years now, I've come on with you guys, and I said it earlier this year. I think he is the best Italian player currently. Just full stop. And
without a question.
Game after game, that's what's happening.
Although, Johnny,
I do have to give Barella credit, because I've come on here a few times with you guys and criticized him. He was Inter's best player today. Careful. I think even before
the goal,
the first 35, 40 minutes where Inter had absolutely nothing going, he was the only one who had two or three decent plays, a good outlet pass, a good run, a couple of defensive interventions. So he did everything today. And his goal aside, we'll get to his goal. But yeah, I think even before that, he was the guy today.
Well, Nick, this is how we know you're a pro in the podcasting space, because that's a perfect segue to talking about this third goal. I do just want to say that ball over the top from Barella in the first half to Lautaro, that Lauti didn't quite get under it properly, but he was gone. He was one-on-one with Provedel. That's how you knew that he was about to have himself a hell of a game. And that's where Inter's third goal comes from. Second half, Inter's on the counter. Hakan slides the ball across to Barella, who is by himself, which is egregious, completely egregious, by himself at the top of the box, is able to, you know, take a touch and rifle it into the top corner. Just an absolute screamer. Everyone is, you know, it's always after these kind of goals where everyone's like, Barella is the best in the world, but they're a little bit scared to say it. Even on games where, you know, he's not scoring. So where do you guys sit on Barella being the best midfielder in the world conversation? Johnny, we'll go to you.
I've only been saying it for 2 years now. I mean, there is no midfielder better than Nicolò Barella in the world. There may be midfielders who are better at certain aspects of their game than Nicolò Barella. But if you want the complete package, you're not going to find a better player than him. And every day that passes, I just think 250 million, 300 million, 400. Like, this is where you have to get 400 million at this point is the only way I would even pick up the phone to listen for him. 400 million euros. I don't, not Gavi,
bro,
not Pedri.
Oak Tree would sell him for 40.
Right.
No, stop. 40 million. Stop.
Well, Tito, give him a call.
Yeah.
Then yeah, maybe we should let Lotito on the team then, because he might not let him go for that cheap. So,
but we'll just wait till he's 40, and then he'll try to sell.
Yeah, exactly. And then he'll get him. You know, he'll sell him to the Saudis for 20 million, which is fine by me at that point. But no, this watching him play. My God, it's if someone said, "Hey, like, here you go. Here's your one wish. You could be have the skill set of any footballer in the world. Who would you pick?" It would be Nicolò Barella. Like, I don't think I wouldn't trade for anybody. Even thinking back to when I was growing up, you know, at that time when I was, you know, it was Pirlo, Xavi, Iniesta, you know, I mean, you could say Lampard, Gerrard, you know, I still would take Nico. Who?
Vieira.
No, fuck it. We don't talk about him. He's public enemy number one right now.
I don't even know who that is.
That's right.
Don't even know him.
All right, Nick. Let me. You know, instead of talking about Barella best in the world, why don't we?
No. Why are we changing the subject? When this podcast was just getting good.
Tough to argue. Changing. It's really tough to argue, and even in the comparison you're making to players of different eras, nobody does the off the ball work that he does, and I think nobody has the defensive skills. I think nobody has the combination of kind of everything. And this might be a little biased because we're Italian. We watch Serie A, right? Like, I understand that there's some truth to that, but he does everything. There's not a weakness to his game, and there's not a lot of players you can say that about, especially now with, I don't know, I feel like midfield, like being a stud midfielder is like barely a part of the game anymore. I don't know. Like, you either have to be a defender or you have to score goals, right? There's almost no wiggle room in the middle. And he's one of the 5-10 guys in the world that are making the argument against that.
And you've watched a lot of SMS, so you know what a complete midfielder looks like. So speaking of, you know, just comparing to different eras and different types of midfielders, just based off of their skill as a player, their game as a player, how would you rank these three midfielders?
Oh, Wesley God, Schneider,
Wesley Schneider, Nicolò Barella, or Dejan Stankovic? Rank them.
Barella, Schneider, Stankovic for me. I know you guys must have a super soft spot for Schneider, I think. I get it. Right, he was at the core of every, you know, those dominant teams in the early 2010s. Or, but I don't know. Was he good off the ball? I'm trying to remember, because you obviously remember what he did with the ball, nah, right? That's
yeah. No, you have it the right order. As hard as it is for me to set aside my, because Schneider is probably my favorite player of all time for Inter. Yeah, no, it's got to be Barella, Schneider, Stankovic.
I think Barella, Stankovic, Schneider, only because I don't...
Me! Oh my gosh, that's it. Alert the... No.
I'm thinking of completeness as a midfielder, and I think that Schneider lacked a pretty big part of this that Stankovic and Barella had, which was, you know, just the engine tracking back, the defensive ability. And maybe it
but
wasn't
one was
even,
a cam.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it wasn't even fair to include him in this conversation. Wow. I just put the future of this podcast on the rocks here.
For sure.
We have to do it for the content. We have to do it for the content.
Listen, I'll be doing off-camera interviews for potential replacements for Alessandro. Please send your resume over to
Yeah. Huyan's got the first slot.
Huyan is not invited. Huyan will not be allowed.
All right. At this point, Lazio's spirit is completely broken, and it is an absolute free-for-all for Inter. You would expect a game like this. I was worried that we were going to jump on this pod and we weren't going to have a lot to talk about, because I thought after the third goal, it was just going to be they see out the game and, you know, it is what it is. We end up talking about 45 minutes plus the first 15 minutes of the second half. That's not how it played out. Goal number four comes, and it is a perfect ball by Bastoni to the back post. Dumfries does his best Cristiano Ronaldo impression, jumps 100 feet into the air, and powers it past the Provedel. Personally, I think it's one of the prettiest goals that I've seen Inter score. It reminds me of the Bastoni to Barella goal against Benfica. You know, different circumstances, because it was a header from Dumfries.
Nicer.
I think it's nicer because of the flight of this Bastoni cross. Nick,
when he got up. Hold on real quick. When he got up, did you think he was putting that in?
I had a second.
Be honest.
I doubted
it 100%. I said, I was like, this ball's going straight up in the air.
Yeah.
And he timed that to perfection. And he got, I mean, that had to be at least, I would say at least 36-inch vertical leap right there.
And it was like also, that connection happens. Like, it was against Roma, Bastoni plays it to the back post, and Dumfries is there. I think that this is actually one of the most valuable parts of Dumfries' game, is that physically, like, as far as the aerials are concerned, you know, just the threat in the air that he has, it's huge. But Nick, at this point, are you watching a beautiful piece of soccer, a beautiful piece of football that you can appreciate, or
was the comeback on for you at this point?
Honestly, at this point, after goal three, the rest of the game was kind of a blur. You know, if Lazio didn't come out strong in those first 5 minutes of the second half, which they didn't, you kind of saw the writing on the wall. So beautiful goal. I'll appreciate it for what it was, but you saw two center backs that just shouldn't be playing at this point in time. And they just look lost and frustrated. And maybe another goal that Provedel does better with on another day. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if we were all wrong about him. Not all, because I know Gianmarco has said correctly that, you know, he was maybe a little bit overrated, but he had some good seasons. And now I'm wondering what the deal is.
Where's Nando at?
I'm betting he's come over to your line of thinking.
We'll see. I'll have to make my my bi-monthly appearance in the group chat there to see what's up.
Doesn't take much longer for the fifth to roll around. Carlos Augusto wins it. Lautaro plays it out to
really nice goal.
Dimarco. Is that his first goal? It's his second goal technically, because he's got one first in the Coppa Italia, but it's first goal. Oh, okay. Yep. Great touch to control the ball in from Dimarco, and then great finish. I saw someone tweet that Augusto remembered he was a Brazilian.
Who said that?
I forget. That's amazing.
Dude, I didn't recognize him with that new hair, man.
Honestly, when I saw the, I was like, who is that? I was like, who came up?
Yeah. Turkey did him right.
He's never been a hug the touchline kind of player, and I tweeted this out. Like, he's much better crashing the box because he does have a level of physicality. Is he a left wing back option moving forward, or is he best as a left center back that crashes the box? Like, he's not going to have the touch that Bastoni has as far as being able to impact the offense, but he might be able to impact it from left center back with these runs that he's able to make into the box. Nick, we'll go with you.
I mean, must be nice to have the luxury, right? With versatile players, or to be up 4-0 and, hey, let's see what you got. Just go forward, or, you know, do whatever you feel like doing. Yeah, listen, it's not like the schedule's getting any lighter for you guys going forward, right? A lot of Champions League. I think we play each other pretty soon in the – not soon, but Coppa Italia is coming up. So
yeah, Supercoppa.
All this shit. Why not? You have to be as flexible as possible. And for him, if he wants to get more game time, which has been hard to come by, whatever gets you on the field, dude.
Yeah. Number six on the board, Marcus Thuram. Beautiful through ball by Mickey. Thuram in the box has shown something this season that we didn't see last season, just a composure to get himself set. Fires it near post past Provedel, looking like Mike Maignan on that one. But I think there's two two narratives from this sixth goal is that one, sixth different scorer for Inter on the score sheet for the night, and two, one goal behind Retegui. And Johnny, I'll kick it over to you. I know that you said you don't think he's going to be able to catch him. Retegui's out of form right now, not playing as much because of that rotation that Nick mentioned up top.
Careful.
Well, how are you feeling now? Like, you think there's a shot?
Listen, I guess the race is on, right? Like, I mean, you can't really count him out. I think that was a beautiful cut. The thing that made me laugh, though, is, like, you know he wants to get in on his right foot. Yeah. Why did you open yourself up like that and allow him that space to be able to? I'll just never understand. Like,
even why people did who any of the goals happen today, Johnny?
Well, one, you don't have a guy in the back who could jump like Denzel. You know, that's one. You know, you need to get some Dutch brothers in the back line there, apparently, to be able to compete with him there. Virgil van Dijk, I heard, might be available.
Yeah,
you got to bring back Jaap Stam out of retirement.
Ooh, I fucking take him.
I think he would have done, you know, not let him jump up to begin with, but that's crazy to give him that ability, that opportunity to open up and take that shot the way he did. So, but yeah, to take it, beat him near post, like you said, very Mike Maignan right there. Now, one could make the argument that he expected, you know, Marcus to go far post there, try to curl it in there. So I could hear that, but you would hope that he would be able to react a little bit better to his near post side there, regardless. But it is what it is. I mean, fantastic finish. I hope he does prove me wrong. I would love for him to win it and to have, you know, back to back you know, top goal scorers for Inter, and be it two different guys, that'd be incredible. So as much as I love Retegui, I'll be rooting for Marcus for sure. And yeah.
He scores an awful lot of goals for not a goal scorer. You know what I mean? Like, and it was kind of, it's tough to say you're rewarded in a 6-0 game, but he had the ball in a lot of dangerous positions trying to tee up his teammates for it to not happen. Kind of good to see him get rewarded from that aspect. I mean, he put in a full 90 when he certainly didn't have to.
Yeah, the conversation around him might need to change. And the conversation around another player, it's going to be interesting after this performance because, like I said, six different goal scorers. Lautaro was not one of them. He did have the pass out to Calhanoglu, who eventually found Dumfries and tipped it over to DiMarco. He also had the pass out to DiMarco, who eventually found Augusto. He pressed hard.
Oh, God, again with the press hard bullshit.
No, but this is what I'm saying. Like, Inzaghi after the match is saying that there's no problem. He was involved. This team scored six goals. We had this type of performance. I saw another person tweet that Lautaro Thuram allows for the best of Inter, even if Lautaro's not on the score sheet. I feel like we have this conversation after every single game, but like we need to keep talking about it until he's able to start scoring. Like, what are we doing here? I thought that he looks like his brain is computing a second slower than it was last year. Like with some of these touches, like some of the things that are not coming off. So, you know, for me, it's a confidence thing, but does it even matter? Does it even matter? If the team is able to play like this and do whatever, are we worried about this scoring drop?
Yeah,
Johnny.
No, we are. We are worried about the scoring drop because that's your leading goal scorer from last season. And he's only contributed 2 league goals so far. That's not a good sign. There's going to come a time where the goals are going to dry up from everybody else. And you're going to look to somebody to pick you up and be able to bang in those goals when you need it. When you're playing like terrible, like absolute trash, and it's, you know, 0-0 against Aleche, you're going to look to Lautaro to be the one to score that 89th minute winner or whatever it may be, you know, to get you out of that and get you all 3 points. He's got to start scoring. I don't care how I don't care if it hits him in the face and goes in. I don't care if it, you know, he's facing away from the goal and it just happens to graze his butt and
needs to see one go in.
He needs to see one go in, man. Like, listen, I'm not trying to turn this into a negative, you know, thing since we just won 6-0. But when you see six goals, if I didn't watch the game, and you told me we won 6-0, I would have expected to hear Lautaro on the score sheet at least once.
Right.
Regardless.
It's an issue. It's an issue for you guys for sure. The one thing I said to you guys, for the past 2 seasons, and he's been outstanding. He's been world class. He's been of the top 3, 4, 5 strikers on the planet the past 2 years. Game in and game out, right? What stats are stats, but right, I'm not a stat merchant, but game in, game out, he's been one of the best strikers on the planet. The biggest games the last 2 years, he's been dry, right? Champions League final, and then the games against Atletico, right? Those losses, or you know, the loss of that tie. That's a big issue. Again, it's unfair to put a lot of that on Thuram because he's not a striker. You've turned him into one, but that's really not his game. And that can't continue to happen. And you know, it was going to be really embarrassing to see a 6-goal loss and the forwards didn't even get a goal. But no, he needs to figure it out. And I don't know what it is because I've gotten on here before with you all. And I said last year when he was off to that blistering start, I don't think we've seen the best of Lautaro yet. I think he has room to grow and get better. And he kind of stalled out a little bit towards the end of last year. And again, didn't need to be the guy because the team picked him up. He had an international tournament that he was probably looking forward to. He performed very well there. So you don't forget to score goals, but it's definitely worrying. If I'm an Inter fan, I'm worried.
If at the end of the season, all you could see was the score sheet, the scores table, and it said Lautaro is sitting on, let's say, 11 or 12 goals, and you were asked, okay, who won the title, would you say Inter?
No chance. No way. That's a hell of a question. I would love to see the list of Scudetto winners and the corresponding list of that team's top scorers. Maybe when Milan won a couple of years ago, they didn't have a 15-goal guy, but I would have to imagine almost every other team has 15-plus goals as their top scorer if you've won a fucking title. I'd be really shocked if it's less than that.
Yeah. Yeah, he does need to turn it around, but I'm really hoping that, you know, we've commented on his weight a little bit, physically looking a little slower this year. I'm really hoping that the issue is just confidence and he just needs to see one roll across the line.
Bring back bullying, you know, fat shame him, shove him in a locker, whatever you got to do, you know, beat him with, you know, socks filled with soap, spray him with Axe body spray, you know, just like things we used to do in high school to the freshmen who were playing like shit on the team. So
send him clips of this podcast.
Send him clips, yeah, whatever. I mean, so I'm telling you, there's times where we bully Denzel Dumfries and he scores a goal in the group chat.
He listens.
Maybe that's all he knows. He knows what's happening. So
we got to try to influence this season one way or another. All right, there's one other performance that we need to talk about, and that is Stefan De Vrij.
How old is he? Fucking guy.
He's like 34 or 35.
Jesus, man. We had him 10 years ago. How's he still doing this shit?
He won a Serie A Defender of the Year with Lazio. So he is leading all defenders in Europe for defensive duels won. Has played every game. Yeah.
All defenders in Europe?
All defenders in Europe. Like at a certain amount of minutes. He has a 93% defensive duel rate, which is insane. So, Johnny, the question. Champions League final is tomorrow. Acerbi and De Vrij are both fully healthy. Who are you starting in that game?
Who are we playing?
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid? I'm starting Stefan De Vrij against Real Madrid. If it was Man City, I would start Acerbi because he already has
Haaland in his pocket.
Ain't going to be Man City this year.
It ain't going to be Man City this year. No, it ain't. Yeah. But yeah, just thinking about the listen, I know that we've seen Stefan get turned by guys who are much slower than him and made to look silly sometimes. But I think in current form, against that speed of that front three, I would want Stefan De Vrij out there. It's not a knock at Acerbi. It's not being disrespectful. I'm talking about just like right now. And just how we talked about it previously, you know, who we would re-sign for next season. De Vrij's been healthy. He's been available and he's been able to, you know, to perform well. So I would kind of keep it the same way. You know, I got to give it to the guys who've gotten me this far. So I would have to stay loyal to De Vrij on that. And, you know, and if it's, you know, he drops a stinker or makes a costly error, Then I'll still live with that because, you know, imagine if you were, I mean, listen, I don't like Mkhitaryan and I don't think he's been good and he's been given the opportunity. But if we got to the Champions League final and let's say it's against Real Madrid and you know, Inzaghi decides that game is the game that he's going to give the start to Zielinski, why aren't you riding with the guys that got you there? You know, like that's how, as much as I would want Zielinski, what changed all of a sudden? You know, like I feel like you have to keep it the same way with everybody. So, I would go with De Vrij.
Nick, do you think when Acerbi returns, let's say, you know, let's call it three more games on the bench and another three great games for De Vrij, do you make the switch to the guy that, you know, you came into the season, Acerbi is your number one. Do you make that switch back?
Doesn't matter. It's the guy who's playing well currently, plain and simple. And you see it in this game. You see it in all sports. Should the Patriots have gone back to Drew Bledsoe in 2001? You know,
that's a great call.
Wow, that was such a great shout. My goodness, can you imagine?
This guy's a pro.
Thank you. No, dude, it's all about form in this game, especially more. I think more so than maybe even any other sport. You feed the hot hand, and you don't know what a Cherubi is going to look like when he gets back. I feel like I'm saying this about a lot of Inter players. It's just unbelievable what you guys are doing with your more experienced players right now. Just everybody's performing at an exceptionally high level. Last time I came on, I think we were talking shit about Mkhitaryan, and he like seems to have just turned it around probably since that episode. So don't tell me the players don't fucking listen to interviews. But no, you stick with the guy.
Yeah. I think I'm on the same wavelength. I think Acerbi does give you a little bit more passing range, but to Johnny's point about we've seen De Vrij get turned by the quicker, faster players, he seems like he's changed his positioning, you know, maybe not putting himself in situations for that to happen. And he's in the kind of form that won him the Defender of the Year for Lazio way back when. So I don't make that switch. All right. We've got to touch on the ex-Laziale, Simone Inzaghi on the bench for Inter. Won 10 trophies with Lazio, has won his fair share with Inter. He rested the guys against Leverkusen. Obviously, that didn't go the way that we wanted. It was going the way that probably he wanted until the 90th minute, and then we saw what happened. But obviously, I feel like a lot of Interisti would be fine with that result if you told them you were going to smack Lazio 6-0. So let's talk a little bit about the decisions that Inzaghi has made this season. I think he's been criticized for his rotation habits in previous seasons, just managing all these different competitions. It does feel like he's kind of got it down this year that, you know, he's able to rotate in the Champions League and we're sitting in the top eight looking at qualification with Sparta Prague and Monaco coming up. And then obviously he has us, you know, just 3 points off of top with a game in hand. Is this Inzaghi's up to date, his best managerial job as far as the rotation is concerned? Nick, I'll kick it over to you.
As far as rotation is concerned, probably. Could he do maybe a little better with the forward still, especially considering form that we just talked about? I think so. I'm guessing Taremi is probably a little upset that he hasn't seen the field all that much. Correa, I forgot he was even on the team until like a couple weeks ago when I saw him for a cameo. So maybe give your workhorses up front a little bit of a rest. But outside of that, yeah, there's almost a little bit of, like I said, what was going on with Atalanta, right? If the game is where it needs to be, 60 minutes is enough for some of these midfielders. And I think that's been a good improvement for you, for sure.
Johnny?
Listen, I used to criticize him a lot for his lack of, and now he's doing it just right. You know, I can't really knock him for that. Do I wish that some other guys would get more opportunities in certain aspects? Sure. But I still think that he's done a very good job of balancing the rotations, balancing, you know, the structure of the team and making it be able to best position themselves based on the opponent that they're going up against. So yeah, this is definitely his best work so far.
All right, and that's the game. Lazio 0, Inter 6. A game in hand and 3 points off of top, sitting in third place. Well positioned on all of our different targets. And Coppa Italia coming up this week against Udinese. He's already said that Jose Martinez is going to get the start. So I think if anything, that should excite.
Really?
He did.
I thought he had no faith in him. Look at that. Interisti were telling me that, oh, is this money wasted? He has no trust. When all we said all along was that he's probably not going to play till the Coppa Italia. Interesting.
He actually said that they've been waiting for the right spot to put him in, that they wanted him for a reason, and he's very excited for him to play against Udinese. So, if anything,
did he now? Interesting. Bought for a reason, huh?
That should.
I thought Alex Medet was coming next summer. I thought that's what everyone was trying to tell me.
Anyone who believed that probably believes every tweet that Fabrizio Romano puts out. All right, let's get into a Q&A here. First up, oh, actually, we already answered this from
actually. Hold on, real quick though, can we shout out Tony Mitch, because he did say all along that that was his agent leaking that information out to try to get a better deal from Napoli. And look at that. Yeah. Napoli came up to what they were asking for. Hmm.
Yeah, don't be a mark. It's like pro wrestling. Like, don't be a mark. Don't believe every single little thing that you see or hear. It's out there for a reason. Same thing if you follow the Juan Soto negotiations, but we're not going to talk about that. All right.
We can talk about it.
No, let's
not. No, we're not talking about it. Oh, shut up, Nick. Yeah.
My buddy Gianni, he rediscovered his Yankee roots this past week. It's been
interesting ride.
I didn't.
Talking shit for years.
Yeah, interesting.
And now he's curious about the first base situation. It's unbelievable.
Interesting.
Nah, man, forget it. Listen, I'm a free agent when it comes to baseball fandom. I'm leaning towards Kansas City. I love Bobby Witt Jr., best player in the MLB. I don't care what anyone says. Been a fan since 1997. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Jay Bell. I used to love Jay Bell.
They call Kansas City the Lazio of Major League Baseball. So have
Yo,
fun.
Yo, the disrespect. Nick, you're going to let him say that.
They made a they won a World Series, so I don't even know if we could call Lazio.
I mean, who they beat that year?
Not that long
ago. Mets?
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
Everyone that doesn't follow baseball is already tuned out. But we have a couple people asking if this was Dumfries' best performance in an Inter shirt. Johnny,
I was not leaked the earlier. Questions. Yes. Just so everybody knows, this ain't a Kamala situation. Did not know the questions.
Yo, I love that.
In real time. All right. So, Nick, let's start with this one. From at @m6adam_, would you give De Vrij a contract extension over Acerbi?
Man, as an outsider, what's an extension? I mean, is a 1 year extension an extension? Then yes, maybe you keep these guys around, but
2 years. Let's say 2 years. What are you doing?
2 years? You do one of them, I guess. Tough. I don't want the recency bias to get in the way because Acerbi has just been fantastic for his entire career. So. Tough to say, but so is the right. I don't know. That's a really tough question to answer. You guys are much closer to it than I am.
Yeah. For me, it's the right because you just can expect him to hold up a little bit more than Acerbi. And you can't be dealing with injuries. Knock on wood. Hopefully we don't have to do it. All right, Johnny, @aperson1352, are we betting on Tejan cooking against Udinese?
Yes, he's cooking him. He's scoring a goal. I'm going to put that out in the atmosphere.
Whoa.
Tejan's getting the score sheet. Yes, sir.
I like that. I'll take this one. Sean from Alabama @Nerazzurripirlo asks, who do we see in Udine? I would like to see Josep Martinez. Who do I want to see? Darmian, Bisek, Palacios in the back. Tejan, Fratesi, Aslani, Zielinski, Carlos, and then Taremi Correa. That's what I want to see. I doubt we get all of that rotation, but let's get some of these guys off their feet. All right, @ChadHennessy9. Lauti still hasn't scored. However, do you believe his contribution in this game was there, in particular his involvement in Di Marco's goal? Nick, did he contribute today, or was it a nothing performance?
I wouldn't call it a nothing performance, but he's definitely the last pick of the group project in this game. tough to fault really anybody on the pitch, but it wouldn't have mattered who was there. I mean, that goal doesn't matter.
Yeah, they probably score more with Correa on the pitch today, actually. But that's a conversation for another day. Johnny @LucaMarchi81 asks, what is Gianmarco going to complain about? All right, floor is over to you, Johnny. What do you want to get off your chest here?
Yeah, no, it's still going to be the same thing, right? Lautaro Martinez's lack of goal scoring. And I'm going to keep complaining about it till he scores. And you know what? Let's do this every episode. We'll keep a little tracker of days since Lauti scored. And I'll just put, there's a little whiteboard there. I'll write it on there. And I'll keep track. Days since Lautaro scored. And that'll be it.
Let's do it. All right. @SFZorro Zoro EI. I can't really see what that is. He said he's asked this before, but not sure if you have it on your list. Oristano has one of the best dribbling percentages in Serie A, and dribbling is one of the few things missing at Inter. What would you do with Oristano at the end of the year? Sell, keep, or new loan? Personally, I think he has a ceiling, and his ceiling is not Inter quality, despite that goal that he scored directly from the corner. Yeah, he can keep doing his thing at another team. I'll root
Welcome
for him,
to Lazio.
Yeah. Could send him over there. Although I don't think he gets into that team. I think, you know, we want these youngsters to succeed, but he's got a ceiling, you know.
Sure.
He's not going to be.
So here's the question I have for a team that actually loans out players and has prospects. Is it better that he's I'm sorry. Where, forgive me. He's at Cagliari. What team is he with?
He's one of those.
He's at Venezia.
Venezia, right? Is it better that he's playing every single game on an absolutely terrible team, or would you rather him be at a Bologna, Fiorentina, Lazio type team, not getting as many minutes, but being around better quality players and having splitting game time?
As somebody with a little insider information on Venezia, they're not really fans of his decision making. So,
really?
Yeah, and I've watched. I would say I've watched maybe three games of Oristano, and although yes, the dribbling is there, he had multiple, and I would say at least that I counted that I remember five opportunities to make the pass to a wide open teammate who all he had to do was literally tap the ball in if he made the pass. And he took the selfish route each time. Now you could make the argument like, oh, you know what? I want my wingers to be that aggressive or to have that killer instinct. Well, if you're not scoring, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
So
one or two times you forgive it.
Yeah. But if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you're not getting on the score sheet, I think that bodes or that doesn't bode well for you. Yeah. So I know that, yeah, they are not very happy with his decision making.
Man, the one thing I'll say. And I've only seen him play once or twice. I recognize the name. I have seen him on the score sheet a few times. I like the mentality, like you said. Like, you know, will the decision making improve as you get more game time, as you mature a little bit? You like to hope so. It doesn't happen for everybody, but if somebody's that good with the ball, you got to give them freedom, man. That's just something that like we don't do anymore in football, and it's like it's kind of heartbreaking, right? Like everybody has to fit into a system. Everybody has to do X or Y. Like, I don't know. Like I'm in it. Don't ever like to bring up Juve, but I'll do it. Like I think they have something special in this Yildiz kid, and they stick him out on the wing. And man, unless you're top two, top three in the world, like if you're out stuck isolated on the wing, you become predictable, right? Like everybody knows what you're going to do at some point. So like to me, if you're that talented with the ball, give players like that the ball. Give them the ball in the middle of the field, and let's see what they could do with it. I don't know if this kid has that skill set or not, or if he purely is just a winger. But if he has those skills, let's see them. And if you're not going to showcase them at Venezia, I don't really know what to say.
That's a great point,
Nick. Just my hot take.
That's why I want to see a player like Nico Paz or Ryan Shirky at Inter, just seeing someone.
Shirky is in. I got to give Johnny credit because I know you've been on him for a while. That kid is special, honestly. He's an old school footballer, but he has a coach that lets him do what he wants. He recognizes, hey, he has the talent. He's going to win me games. He's going to get the ball where it needs to go. And that's what they do.
He could get called up for Italy too. I don't know why that hasn't.
I don't want that. I'm gonna. That's why I'll draw the line. I don't think that he should. He's got Algerian and French descent. Like you know, like come on.
You know what's funny? You will tend to make exceptions for players that make a difference, and I think he's a difference maker.
He's 100% a difference maker, but at the same time, it's like you just continue to do this and continue to take spots.
I don't know about his heritage. I don't know why he's even being considered. I can't really speak on that. But
it's funny. Like so, I used to be on the side where it's like, oh no, you know, like let him play. Now as I've gotten older, and honestly, I'll give credit to Sean McIntosh because we've had long conversations about this. You're taking away from actual Italians. And like, now me and him kind of disagree on Retegui. Yes, he has Italian heritage, and you know, there is lineage in his family that, you know, I think his grandmother on his father's side, you know, is from Italy. But yeah, like, he doesn't speak a word of Italian. He not a lick. And the only, and he kind of said, he's like, the only reason he picked Italy is because he knew he didn't have a shot at Argentina. And same thing with Ryan Cherki, right? Like, he will not get a chance with France, and he'll probably settle. It is crazy. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. France is loaded with talent in the midfield, but to not even give this guy a shot is nuts.
I mean, you would give him a call up just to make sure he can't.
Right.
With another.
Yeah. But that becomes the question. And I don't disagree with what you're saying. And it's, everybody's going to draw that line differently, right?
Sure.
Who's Italian? Like, none of us are Italian then, right? Like, we couldn't get called to Italy. We could, but we couldn't. Could. Right, you know, depending on who you ask, because people got to stick up their ass about it. But where do you draw the line, right? You draw the line with game breakers. And the only thing I'll say in favor of it is we're letting other countries do it, and they're benefiting from it in a big way where we're not, right? Like,
but like,
look
but,
at France.
But really, like, okay. Yeah,
like, France. And this is not to get into a geopolitical argument or any type of,
sure.
I don't care, right? Doesn't,
now,
doesn't
we're,
matter.
We're all grown adults. We can have,
right,
this conversation.
Their best players are not ethnically French. I don't think one of their best players is ethnically French, but they won a fucking World Cup. So would I trade that for Italy to win a World Cup? That's a tough question, is all I'm saying. And where I 100% agree with you is in the league, where, like, Fiorentina has been a huge example for me the past couple of years. You got guys like Kwame and Ikone, 26, 27-year-old players that happen to be from Africa. I think they're average players. And for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, I'm watching these guys start every game. And like, that to me, I don't like when Italians aren't getting the chance to play in the league over foreigners that are just mediocre. This isn't the 90s or early 2000s where the foreigners that came in were the best of the best. If you're not making it over them, that's one thing. But if you're not starting kids over Kwame, Ikone,
yeah,
like, I don't know. Udinese, like that. That's where I get pissed off.
What would Sotil look like if he had been playing these past, you know, 3 years, every game out wide for Fiorentina?
Right.
As of November 21st, 2024, an article that an Italian delegation has reportedly made contact with French counterparts in an attempt to get him to play for Luciano Spalletti. He was born in France and is of Algerian descent, but according to Corriere dello Sport, he also has Italian heritage through his paternal grandmother. So it's a couple degrees removed.
Yeah. And again, that's the question, right? Like,
you're French, you have Algerian blood, you know, and it's like, but because of your grandmother, now we're going to try to get you to be Italian. Like, I don't know.
I get that.
It's tough. Like, I mean, listen, I would. I talked about this with my dad. If I had the opportunity to play for Italy, of course I would want to play for Italy. Would I feel right playing for Italy? I barely speak Italian. I speak just enough to have a small conversation, you know, like where I'm able to get around if I'm lost and stuff, and I'm able to, you know, joke about certain things. But if I had to, like, sit in front of a reporter and tell them, you know, my love for Inter, I could probably do a decent job, but not enough to, you know, to really warrant it. And, you know, my dad said he would want me to play. I feeling like I'm undeserving would probably either choose the United States or,
if
I mean,
you had the
I
choice between the two.
Yeah. Like, if those were my two options, like, I mean, on my mother's side, I could probably, you know, play for Wales and Spain. I hate Spain, so I would never play for Spain. You know, it pisses my grandfather off on my mom's side, but I would never, even if, and I speak better Spanish than I do Italian, and I still would never play for Spain. So the Welsh side,
again, man, it's really difficult.
It is
to draw the line for a lot of different reasons. But somebody, like, when I hear, oh, his grandfather's from Italy. Oh, okay, I resonate with it because that's where my grandparents were from Italy. You know what I mean? So, like, is he more
not,
or less
not,
Italian
not to
than
get
me.
Too, like, in the weeds, but were your parents, was your father, your, you know, born in Italy or
no? My both my parents were born in the U.S. All
born
my grandparents were born in Italy.
Okay, My father was born in Italy, or Sicily, and then he came when he was 10 years old. He came to the U.S. You know,
but like when it's somebody. I'm sorry, just last like Retegi, like you're from Argentina. Like the culture's so similar.
Sure.
That like, you know, it's almost an easier sell. Like I'm trying to agree with you. You know what I mean? Like that's an easier sell than maybe Cherky, who's like, okay, this guy probably identifies 0% with Italy. And then we're going to try to call him up.
Yeah.
Like I get what you're saying.
It is, you know, it has to be part of your, I guess, upbringing, right? Because you do see one of the most chilling moments in football that you can watch is the Italian players singing the national anthem. It is like universally everyone sees that and they see like there's a genuine pride. Does, you know, would Cherky be Cherky saying wouldn't know a word of it. No. It's a very interesting conversation. I mean, both my parents were born in Italy. I grew up like in an Italian household raised by my nonna who spoke Italian to us. I feel a strong connection. I never followed like U.S. soccer growing up. If it was the choice same. Between the
it wasn't,
two,
but it wasn't. It also wasn't there for us to follow.
Yeah, right. It's not the way it is today. Like, yeah, when we were younger, they were trash. They weren't televised. You know, like when whatever a European power was playing, it was on TV.
Yep.
You hardly saw the U.S. The only U.S. I knew was actually the women's team.
And we're all sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ale, but we're all passionate about calcio because of our family, right? Like, so I get it. That's you know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Before we change this up, I just got thoughts on, because again, Sean and I got heated about this too. Jorginho and Thiago Motta playing for Italy.
Like I said, it's number one, you make an exception for difference makers. I don't want to overlook that aspect of it, but you're talking about people who I feel are culturally and ethnically Italian. So I don't really have a problem with it.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, what I was just going to say was like, if you told me that bringing Cherky into the team would mean that we get to celebrate another World Cup, like I would say no brainer, right? Jorginho was able to win a Euro with us. Like it's, you don't like to Nick's point about difference makers. Like I want to win trophies. Like
we're watching Spain and France and Germany benefit from it when we're not.
Right.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just going to keep playing devil's advocate though. Like, but they're not good enough for the countries that they're originally from. But now they're good enough for us. So now you're saying that our talent that bad that we don't have a midfielder who listen, Cherky plays a position that I mean, unless we go to the 3-4-1-1.
I know. It's a dead position. I don't see
him playing anywhere on this, to be honest. Like
I don't disagree with you, and I think we've had good midfielders.
If anything, that's our strongest position.
Right. It's tough,
it's
man.
It's the Daniele Maldini position, and they want to get him integrated too. So is it like, are you going to throw Maldini's, you know, international career under the bus or what could be to bring in Cherky? I mean, yeah, it's a tough conversation.
I mean, yeah, like I'm trying to think. I forget his name now.
But Ali coming up, like, you know, he could be something. Or are you going to stunt his shot at getting into the
again?
National
you
team?
Asked if we have the talent or not. I think we do have the talent. I think our youth teams have done spectacularly over the past 4 or 5 years. Right? I don't know that anybody's won a championship, but they're in the finals and the semifinals of all these tournaments. I don't think talent's an issue. I think it's getting these guys meaningful playing time. I think a lot of them stick around in the Italian leagues too long. Like, if they're not getting the opportunity, go abroad. That's where you're
like
seeing
like Baldanzi. He hasn't gotten
Pafundi,
really a
Pafundi.
Like, I would
want
like Pafundi too. Yeah, like you're gonna tell me that now you're gonna bring in Cherky, but you can't let these guys get it. Like Baldanzi, I think is phenomenal. I really do. I mean, I don't think he's in the right situation at Roma, but I think that when he came on for Empoli against Inter, I said this guy's gonna come in and score, and he did come in and score. He's a phenomenal little player. He's honestly like almost like a light version of Dybala in some ways, you know? So it's like, you're going to tell me he's not good enough to get a crack at the national team, like in Pafundi as well?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Play that position?
Kolpani's good too.
But here's the thing. Kolpani could 100% play that position.
At some point, one of these players has to break through to be that guy in any position, right? Like at some point, because I just got on here 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, and made the argument that I think these players don't get enough playing time unfairly. But at some point, which one's going to be world-class and breakthrough? Every other country's got a 16, 17, 18-year-old on their national team already playing.
But like, yeah. Look, like, I mean, we are so far behind in giving these players a chance. Now, right. Rovella finally starts, and my dream midfield for the World Cup is Rovella, Tonali, and Barella.
Yeah.
Like, that to me would be perfection.
Yeah.
Ricci backing them up. Like, I would even interchange Ricci and Rovella, but I would rather, right now, Rovella.
Best three we have.
Like,
yeah.
And it took him to get an opportunity.
Di Marco, one of the best, if not the best, left wing back in the world. Barella, the best midfielder in the world. Bastoni, you know, the best ball playing
center back in the world. It just happens they all play for Inter.
Has a shot at being, you know, one of the best center backs in the world. It's like, yeah, yeah. Oh, man. The Italian national team. A pretty
good
pretty...
question, whoever asked the question. Yeah. Thank you. I don't even Thank know.
How did
that.
We get on? What was the original question? How did we get on that?
I think we were talking about Oristanio.
Yes. That's where we took off. Okay.
I just want to pull up the Italy draw for the World Cup qualifiers really quickly.
Zero excuse to not make it out of either group.
Yep. It's depending on the double pathway. So if they beat Germany in the Nations League quarterfinals next year, the opponents are Slovakia, Northern Ireland, and Luxembourg. If they don't, it would be Norway, Israel, Estonia, Moldova.
Another
should
cakewalk.
Dominate both groups.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
That should be, I'm not even kidding. If there's a single draw in either of those groups, you fire Spalletti immediately. And I'm not
cosine.
Even kidding.
Absolute.
I'm
cosine.
Not even kidding.
Absolute.
There
cosine.
Is no excuse to get a draw against any of. The, no. I don't care if Slovakia plays the game of their lives and they score 6 goals. We better get 7.
Agreed.
That's all I'm going to say. There's no excuses.
Yeah. All right.
And when those games are played, we should have, again, barring any injuries now, but the current injured players should be ready for that.
An hour and 20 minutes in. Riveting.
Were there any other questions?
No.
I feel like I got notifications. I just didn't read them all. And I wanted to make sure I didn't want to leave anybody out like we did with Zorro on the Oristanio one.
Let me see. The other only other one was, do you think Augusto's new hairline had anything to do with that first
yes,
goal?
Absolutely. 100%. We
100%. He's got that Brazilian flow now. He was able
Bro's
to little,
get bitches now.
Bro, he's taking he's ready. Home. I'm telling you right now, we might have a new Icardi on our hands. He might be stealing somebody's wife in the locker room. We don't know.
With DiMarco is next. DiMarco is next.
Now, you know what? I'm so used to it now that he can't. He can't do it now. It's too late.
The blonde hair is what's saving him because you can't, you know, it doesn't
show. You think that's why he keeps dying it?
Yeah. That, I mean,
that's
got to
be, right? It's got to be.
100%. 100%.
That's crazy.
If it was jet black,
I can never go blonde. I couldn't do it.
Horrible.
Couldn't do it.
Me neither. There. All right, boys, hour and a half in. It's been an absolute pleasure. Nick Diani, the incomparable. Plug your stuff, brother.
Appreciate you guys having me. Don't appreciate the results, so next time let's not do that again. But thank you again. Kicks and Picks podcast at Kicks Picks Pod. Usually live shows on Twitter and YouTube on Wednesdays. Mix it up every now and then. Also available on all your podcast platforms, but we discuss Serie A and EPL, give out some bets. We've gotten some really good participation in the chats and in the comments, so usually a lot of fun, a lot of jokes, a lot of laughs. Typically we get a lot of shit right, but I made the ridiculous mistake this last week of saying Roma was going to absolutely run away against Como. And yeah. That didn't happen. So I will own up to my mistake there. Just
shout out.
Why
Nico
did I trust
Paz.
Roma? Why did I trust Roma?
Keira Knightley had other ideas.
Yeah.
Johnny, some admin.
Some admin? What are you?
Some admin. The autographed.
Giving away
card.
Some cards? What are we doing? Come on.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we got to give away. Listen, I have the Hakan. We're going to be doing the draw later. Look, I'm not lying. It's right. Right here. Oh, look at that glare. That's ridiculous. I need to move apartments now. But it's right there, the card. So Hakan autograph card. It's a beautiful card. I actually just sent the other one that I had that's the same exact copy out to get graded. So hopefully that comes back a 10. Otherwise, there will be tears. But yeah, gonna be doing that, and probably gonna be throwing in another card in that just because I feel like being a nice guy. So,
all right. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.